Now, it's Gabe time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's Gabe time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Off and rolling. It is Wednesday, September 11th, 2024. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. 23rd anniversary of a day we'll never forget in American history. Where the Twin Towers went down, one of the worst terror attacks. We have seen a day of remembrance for the people that lost their lives, the first responders, the people that were working. It is a strange time for it to, you know, happen this way. We had a debate last night in which we get reminded of how divided we are as a country. And on a day like today, I can't stop or help but think how close we were, how locked arm in arm we were at that moment. Even through a tough time, even through a miserable time in American history, we were arm in arm. We all were pulling in the same direction. And it's just strange the timing of the debate last night and the 23rd anniversary of the attacks there in New York on the Twin Towers. But just a strange day for everybody every time it comes around. But just make sure you never lose sight of remembering the people that lost their lives on that fateful day in 2001. But welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside, as always, the executive producer of the show. That'd be Connor Dunning on X at CDunning99. Connor, how's it going, brother?
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. But we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN. And yours truly, we're going to open on overreaction, not an overreaction. Then we will have plenty from there. As far as guests are concerned, Jason Smith will join at 5 o'clock. I agreed to a home and home with him, Connor. I hope we're good. You know, the Jason and John show and the Gabe Kuhn show, we are allies. We enjoy each other's company. So I agreed to a home and home. He's coming on at 5 o'clock today. I will be on at 1:25 tomorrow on the Jason and John show. Home and home, great deal that we worked out this morning. We didn't have to get a contract out because we can just fly by the seat of our pants, agree to a handshake deal. That's how good of friends we are. But Jason will be at 5 o'clock. 6 o'clock, Colton Denning will join. He's the normal guest on Wednesday, usually at 4:30, but we moved him to 6 o'clock because we have a lot to talk about, including Florida State and Memphis, which we'll talk about off the top of the show. But he's from Two Stripes CPD. Make sure you go subscribe to that. We'll have a trip around the NFL at 5:30, Blitz at 6:30. But you know what? I don't want, and also we do have a new Memphis Tiger. Had a commit today. We'll talk about it at the bottom half of this hour, but I want to go ahead and get right into it. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Now it's overreaction or not an overreaction.
We are two wild and crazy guys.
That's crazy.
Chill, homie.
On the Gabe Kuhn Show from 92.9.
All right, Gabe, Memphis plays Florida State at 11 a.m. on Saturday. They continue to be a 6.5-point dog, but we know that if circumstances have changed surrounding the game. If Memphis wins, they are in the driver's seat in the group of five. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
This is a strange time to ask this question because you had Boise State on the road take Oregon down to the wire. Last week you had Kansas State, who is likely the favorite to win the Big 12, only win by 7 points over Tulane, and both those teams look very good. Liberty's still undefeated. UNLV has put themselves into the conversation after beating Houston week one by 20 on the road, a year after they lost their starting quarterback and had to replace him. But I'm going to say this is not an overreaction in the slightest. If you go 3-0, beat an ACC team that was ranked in the preseason top 10, AP top 10, I think that you will be in the driver's seat in the group of five. Now, you are still going to have to handle business from then on, but most of the teams that you feel like have the ability to potentially knock you off that perch have already lost a game. South Florida lost to Bama. Tulane, of course, lost to Kansas State. And Boise State lost to Oregon. Now, I know all of those losses look a whole lot better than if Memphis were to lose that Florida State game. But if Memphis wins this game, they will be in the driver's seat. I don't think there's any question. I feel like this team is in a very, very good spot. I know there's a lot of people concerned about like the movement of the line by Vegas, and I don't really get what it is. If it has to do with a week of extra preparation for Florida State and a Florida State team that's angry. You knew that last week when they were 1.5-point favorites. But maybe there's something else going on. Maybe there'll be a quarterback switch if DJU struggles early in that game. But I actually feel good about where this game is headed. If you go look at the ESPN matchup predictor, it gives Memphis a 27.2% chance to knock off Florida State. I think it should be a little bit higher than that. Percentage chance I would put it at is about a 40 to 45% chance. I just feel like this Memphis team can exploit some things that Florida State has struggled with all year. We saw what Memphis was able to do in running the ball with Mario Anderson Jr. I feel like that's a guy who can always fall forward, give you 2-3 yards on just about every give that you give to him. So I feel like they'll be able to run the ball. I do think this game offensively, though, is going to be won by Seth Hennigan and all of those great receivers. Because the secondary for Florida State has not been tested this year by the first two opponents. I feel like Memphis is going to throw a different look at Florida State. They've probably spent 2 weeks trying to get their run defense right, trying to get that front seven all put together, and maybe they'll be a little bit better there. Of course, they have the ACC bodies, all the bodies that Mike Norvell brought in from various Power 5 programs, whether it was Georgia with Marvin Jones Jr., they got their guy, Peyton, Patrick Peyton at the other end, big, you know, SEC, ACC caliber bodies. So maybe that will wear on the Tigers in the trenches. But I feel as if they've spent a lot of time doing that, and this is a good time for Memphis to go exploit them through the air. On the defensive side of the ball, I actually feel pretty confident about what Memphis can throw out there. The defensive line I'll have a little bit of concern about, but those linebackers are very, very good. You have Matt Hudson, you have Chandler Martin, you have the AAC Defensive Player of the Week, and Elijah Herring, who we've had on the show, friend of the show. He had a heck of a week last week. I feel like those linebackers can hold up, stop the run, which is what Florida State's going to want to do. And then once you get them to second or third and long, you can get after DJU because he's not very accurate when he's under pressure. He gets very uncomfortable. And I feel like Mike Norvell has still not figured out what DJU is as a quarterback. He's got to figure out how to manage this offense around a quarterback who just doesn't seem to have it. So I feel good about this game, but I think ultimately, if Memphis wins, they are absolutely in the driver's seat to go get that group of five spot in the college football playoff.
I'm not really sure how you could argue otherwise, because yes, Tulane and Oregon had good games, but at the end of the day, they lost those games.
Yep.
And a win is better than a loss.
Yes.
Is that a hot take?
Yeah.
Is that too much?
Hashtag analysis.
I understand that Florida State, lost to Georgia Tech. They lost to Boston College. But it's still Florida Tech or Florida State. It's still at home. Memphis would have to. It's a huge road win that Memphis would have to win.
It's still a former top 10 team two weeks ago.
Yeah. Memphis would absolutely be in the driver's seat. We basically broke it down. You just kind of did a short summary of it. But yesterday I asked you point blank, what are going to be the game plans of both teams? And Mike Norvell, he wishes he could throw the football, but I just don't know if DJU can accurately throw the ball further than 10 yards down the field.
I love your question yesterday, too, because it got me thinking. And I think it got a lot of the listeners thinking, because I got some questions about it as well after the show. But you're like, what do you think his plan is offensively to go after this Memphis defense? And I was like, how can it be anything other than run the ball, get to play action, and give DJU easy reads? That's the only thing he can do. And even with that, they've struggled with that against Boston College and Georgia Tech. So I know that this is a different set of circumstances. You could say that Boston College and Georgia Tech may have some bigger bodies on the defensive side of the ball, but I don't think that's all the I don't think that's where the conversation stops. I think that this Memphis team is going to see a lot on film that they can exploit, especially on their defensive side of the ball. They can get into the face of DJU, 5-6-man pressures, and they can feel a little bit confident about it. And even if you get beat a couple of times by DJU's arm, he's not going to do that several times in this game. He has not been able to do it. We're going on a 4-year sample size where the guy has not been able to consistently complete passes downfield even when he's blitzed. So if he does that a couple of times, you can't get discouraged. You have to stick to the game plan and keep moving forward.
Do you think it could simply come down to whoever runs the football the best wins the game?
I don't even think it's that. I don't even think it's that, because I think Florida State will have the opportunity to be the leading rushing team in this game. What I think it comes down to ultimately is, what is Florida State actually going to be able to do in touchdown production on their side of the ball? And defensively, can they hold up in the secondary? Because I do believe that Memphis is going to try to open up this playbook. It feels like, and I want your opinion on this. Through the first 2 weeks, North Alabama and Troy, this Memphis team has not really gotten exotic.
The first week, definitely not.
They were not, and even last week, I know they ran the ball better, but it still was a lot of inside zone, outside zone, just sort of normal concept.
Last week's second quarter, for a moment, felt like they were opening it up a little bit, but I think it's because it was tied 7-7, and I personally think that Silverfield and the staff was like, we just don't want to be tied with this team anymore. We're clearly better. Let's just go ahead and get a lead.
Here's the other thing, what we have become used to in this offense with Rock Taylor, Demir Blankets, Kobe Drake, all these really good players on the outside, and Seth Hennigan, of course. We've become used to deep shots down the field. Mm-hmm. I have not seen them even attempt that yet.
No, they have not. Seth's yards.
They've not gone out of their way to try to attempt anything downfield. I'm telling you, as much as you look at the first two games and you could start thinking about, okay, well, Georgia Tech exploited the hell out of that defensive line and that front seven. Boston College, same thing. I think Memphis is in a different, peculiar situation. When you look at Georgia Tech, Haynes King, really good at using his legs. You look at Boston College, Thomas Castellanos, really good at using his legs. Memphis doesn't have that. So I think Florida State's going to have an easier day in their front seven. So I think what it comes down to is, can you keep Seth Hennigan upright, and can those wide receivers create separation? And I've seen those wide receivers create separation against some of the best secondaries in college football. Last year against Mizzou, they got open. They had a good day. Rock Taylor caught for 100 yards. I still think that this passing offense can really open up this week, and I think they've been saving it. I truly believe that.
I know it's only been two games, so the sample size is very small, but right now it is the fewest yards per pass that Seth Hennigan has had in his career so far at Memphis. It's only 7.8 when it's usually been around 8.5. So that's a pretty significant difference right there. So I do think that they're going to try to open it up a little more, but I just think that after what we saw against Boston College and Georgia Tech, they're definitely going to try to just run the ball down their throat a little bit too, but it's because it will open up the passing game for them. And weirdly enough, does Memphis have a bit of an advantage here in the skill position players?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I would say so. I would really say so. Like, you think a lot about Malik Benson because that's an Alabama guy went to Florida State, and you feel like, okay, maybe he was going to be their guy. I think they have really good running backs, but Memphis has really good running backs as well, although they did lose Sutton Smith. But I thought Greg DeRosier sort of filled in pretty nicely against Troy. But when you talk about the wide receivers, I'm not sure it's particularly close. They have the talent. They have the guy in Rock Taylor who's the contested catch guy. They have Demir Blankensy who can beat you deep, and he is very, very fast. You have Kobe Drake who can be your possession guy, and they are very experienced, whereas I don't think Florida State has near that experience. And I think that's where Memphis is making up the ground in the skill position battle on the offensive side of the ball.
So you've given us key players. Could you give me an X-factor guy on both sides?
Okay, X-factor guy on both sides. I'm going to go with Demir Blankensy for Memphis on the offensive side of the ball, because I think that's their big play threat, right? That's their big play guy. They're going to scheme some skinny posts. They're going to try to get him on some of those nine routes, see if they can get something to get a scheme a one-on-one open and he can catch a ball downfield. If they are able to create some massive chunk plays early in that game, you could demoralize Florida State. And when we talk about big plays, yeah, Rock Taylor can do it. Rock Taylor's made big plays in his past. I understand that. But Demir Blankensy is the guy who can beat you with speed, who has that Florida State caliber speed, if you will. So I think that's the guy you need to pay attention to on the offensive side of the ball. On the defensive side of the ball, Chandler Martin, move around. Let's see it. And that's sort of copy and paste every game. And that, even though Elijah Herring was damn good in game two against Troy, he won the freaking AAC Defensive Player of the Week for the AAC. So I think that linebacking core in general will be the massive, massive turning point for this team. Can you stop the run using those linebackers? And I think Memphis has shown that they can do that. I know this is different competition than they've played the first 2 weeks, but I think all those linebackers are sort of pulling in the right direction, and they all have great talent.
Have you seen the water gun video?
Yeah, I say, well,
it's hysterical.
I get it.
It's so funny. It's so funny.
But you know what it's for, right?
No.
Okay.
I don't know what it's for.
Sometimes they'll get out the water gun for the wide receivers, and they'll do like over-the-shoulder catches because it's hard to catch when the...
It's for contested catching.
Yes, it's for contested... Well, rain game catching. That's what they do it for.
Is it expected rain this weekend?
No, I don't necessarily
Maybe so.
Know.
I mean, the hurricane's coming in.
It could happen. Yeah. It could happen. But I saw that, and I get people are getting their jokes off about Florida State. They're like, oh, fire everyone. They're just having water gun fights in the background. They get out the water guns for the quarterbacks, to get used to gripping the ball in the rain. They get out the water guns for punt returners. When punt returners, they're distracting them with the water guns. They get it out for those contested catches in the rain over the shoulder. Can you make the catch even though the ball is wet and you're getting sprayed in the face by rain? I saw the tweets out there, but I think people need the inside scoop on that. That was not just a water gun fight. They do that for a reason. And they do that at Memphis as well. They do that at Memphis.
It was just hysterical. You just see DJU taking basic snaps, and then just two guys running in the background.
With the water gun. But if you saw the one guy chasing with the water gun, you saw the wide receiver with his arms open for an over-the-shoulder catch. But it's funny. I get the jokes that are being made, but you need a little inside baseball to really understand what was happening. I can tell you from experience, with Mike Norvell, he would not allow a random water gun fight to break out in period number three of a practice. That would not work out. He'd be very angry. He would kick you off the field. He may kick you off the team, for God's sakes. He'd be very, very, he'd make you run laps. So that is not what it looks like on the surface. That is, they have a rhyme and a reason for what they were doing there.
I feel like if Memphis goes in to Tallahassee and wins that game this weekend, we're going to see that video a whole lot, whether truth or not. You know, it's because the internet always tells the truth.
It is kind of wild, though. Like, thinking back on DJU and his experience in college, like, right after that, he had, 400 yards, and he ran for, 50 in that game against Notre Dame that Clemson ended up losing when he had to fill in for Trevor Lawrence. And then that next year, you remember how many, brand deals he was striking? I mean, he was on Dr. Pepper. He had the Dr. Pepper deal, and he had all these other deals in town at Clemson. And everything's just sort of drying up for the guy. It has been a really tough go for that guy. Like, the amount of expectations we had for him versus what he is now, it's like, he went from 100 to 0 very, very quickly. And I understand, at Oregon State in the second year at Clemson, he paced a little better and he had decent stats. But he's just never been able to consistently make the plays we expected him to make. And I still think he has a good skill set. But skill set has to meet, the brains of the operation as a quarterback. And he's never been able to get those two things together. His physical attributes have not been able to help alleviate what he does not have above the neck.
It's just, for me, it's been, he hasn't been able to consistently throw the ball down the field.
Yep.
It's as simple.
But he's got a cannon. But he's got a cannon.
So did Joe Milton.
Right.
Joe Milton also had a cannon.
But I think it's unfair to even put Joe Milton in that conversation.
No, Joe Milton's much better.
Milton could complete some of those things. Now, I knew sometimes he would throw it into the fifth row.
Sometimes.
But sometimes he could complete some of those balls downfield. You haven't seen that from DJ yet.
Man, remember the NFL offseason when we were being told that Joe Milton was going to be a starter?
And again,
NFL offseason's so weird.
Well, and it just goes to show Joe Milton, and we talked about this at the time, must be the best practice player in the history of him ever, because he fooled Michigan into having him start. He fooled Tennessee fans into thinking he was going to be a Heisman candidate. And then he fooled Patriots fans into thinking he was better than Drake May, even though he was drafted five rounds
when
later.
When he throws the football, the sound barrier gets broken.
Yeah, for sure.
It's amazing.
He's strong, he's fast, he's got all the attributes you want. But again, you have to have it above the neck, and I don't know if he ever quite got there. Definitely better than DJU, but not to the point where he was ever going to be a Heisman candidate or a starter in the NFL.
If all of the receivers were 6'8", he'd be a Hall of Famer.
Oh, God.
All right, moving on. Richard Jefferson says Ja Morant has the most to prove this season. The Grizzlies were the Oklahoma City Thunder two seasons ago. Obviously, there's been injuries. There's been a lot of things that have gone on, but don't forget who Ja Morant is. Richard Jefferson is correct. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Without question, he's correct. Not an overreaction in the slightest. This is a prove-it year for Ja Morant returning to the court after all of the nonsense that has happened the past 2 years and showing that he can stay on the straight and narrow and still be the 26-point-per-game, 8-assist-per-game guy that he's been in the past, be the all-star he's been in the past. If all those things can come together for Ja Morant, this Grizzlies team is going to be good. There's just no doubt in my mind about it. But I do kind of agree with his sentiment. Like, the Grizzlies a couple of years ago, when they were ahead of schedule winning 56 games, you're like, what is this team going to be in a couple of years? They have some flexibility. They have these top three guys that are all under 25. What is this going to look like? I think the Thunder have outpaced them, though. I think the Thunder have done a better job with their circumstances with the Grizzlies. Now, I also can give you the understanding that the Thunder didn't have the injuries, didn't have the off-court issues, didn't have all this nonsense blow up in their face. So that's probably part of the reason. But this is the year for the Grizzlies to announce themselves back on to the scene. And I think, you know, Rob Fisher, who we have on the show every once in a while, does pre and post for the Grizzlies. I don't have to tell you who Rob Fisher is, but it's Rob Fisher. He said, this is the Remind Me Tour. I agree with that wholeheartedly. This Grizzlies team has a chance to remind everybody in the NBA who they are.
That's where I was going to say, I disagree with it slightly in that I don't think it's the most to prove. I think it's the most to remind. Because I think that John Morant has proven that he is one of the best players in the NBA. He's just got to remind people of that. And it really does feel like if you go and you look at all the predictions, like, I still cannot believe that ESPN has the Grizzlies where they are in their preseason rankings. That just doesn't make any sense to me.
What are they, 13? Or are they lower than the 16?
I think they were like 10.
Okay, they were 10.
They were 10 or 11. They were at the bottom of the West. They were at the, they were in the play-in or right outside of the play-in. Either way, with this team, with a healthy roster, I expect them to be a top five team in the Western Conference. I think they're a team that should make it to the second weekend in the NBA playoffs. I think that that may be a bar for success for a lot of the fan base, and I think that that is a fair one to have. You've got to see progress this year, because it does feel like last year was a lost year. There's no way around that, and you are in the middle of this window with players like John Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., Desmond Bane. You have a couple guys on team-friendly contracts right now. You have a solid roster, so you have to go out there and compete and win right now, and to be quite honest, John Morant is the type of superstar that can push you over the edge. He really is. I've said it a few times. The path for an MVP storyline is set right now for John Morant. Do I think he's going to win it? Probably not. I think it's Luka and SGA's to lose. But if the Grizzlies win 50-plus games, there will be a conversation about John Morant with the MVP because he reminded people, I am one of the best players in the NBA.
And I expect him to do that.
Just go back and look at his playoff performances.
Right.
Like, that's what's been bothering me, is he's been compared a few times to guys who have had zero playoff success. And it's like, no. This is the same guy that was putting 40 on people in the playoffs, 40 on the eventual champions.
18 points in the fourth quarter to go win a game against the Timberwolves in the first round.
I was in the building.
Yes.
He took over the game.
Right.
And he murdered somebody in front of all
of
us.
Yes, yes.
And it was awesome.
Malik Beasley. He's still around. He's still with us, though.
He's not the same.
He did recover. But no, okay, I know we're arguing a little semantics here, but you say they have the most to remind the NBA of, not necessarily the most to prove, but I think there's something innate in having to prove that you can do it again with all of the nonsense you have had.
What
you
have put in the past. What he has to prove is that he's just going to be quiet off the court. That's it.
Okay.
It's just no drama off the court. That's the prove it part. I think on the court, it's just remind people. You've proven all you need to on a basketball court. Just continue the way that you've been moving
since
everything went down.
That is true.
He's done everything he has been asked for, not more.
I don't think NBA circles, I don't think there's anybody doubting what John Morant can do on an NBA basketball floor going into
I think some have forgotten. I don't know if
they doubt, but there's definitely because you haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah.
But have you seen the, so Jaren was on the Chris Vernon show.
He
was talking about Zach Edey. I don't know, Jaren Jackson was not, he was not giving up the secrets about what he's seen in practice from Zach Edey. But he tried to lean into this idea that Zach Edey may be able to shoot the ball. Is that kind of what I got? That's what I surmised from his spot with Chris Vernon this morning?
It sounded like he wasn't trying, because he said, I don't want to come on here and just say he's good at this, and this, because he doesn't want to, you know, put an idea out there of what Zach Edey is that may not be true. But it was tongue-in-cheek, because he was like, you know, he can't. He said, I'm not going to say he can do this. I'm not going to say he can do this. And he would give little looks here and there. Like, he was clearly saying that Zach Edey has been highly impressive so far in workouts. And then he brought up specifically Luke Kennard, and he said, what does Luke Kennard do well? And they said, shooting? And he went,
Okay.
Listen, I got to see it.
Of course.
But if Zach Edey comes out with an M. Night Shyamalan twist of having a three-point shot, plan the parade.
That would be.
Could you imagine?
I mean, honestly, not really. That's the thing. Like, if you have...
It's hard for
if
me.
Zach Edey was able to, instead of the pick and roll, pop every once in a while and give that different look to defenses and knock down at like a 35% clip from three, that would be absolutely... I mean, the rest of the league should be terrified of that. That's like...
I got to see it.
That's scary hours for the rest of the Western Conference, if that's able to come to fruition.
He does have a very good touch from the free throw line.
And he's not a bad shooter. Like, even at the combine, he shot well. But again, with any big... Like, we've seen in the past, like, you know, workout videos of Steven Adams. Oh, he's going to three ball. Look at this. You know, Rudy Gobert. It's like, you see those things. I think Zach Edey's probably a little bit, you know, more inclined to be able to do something like that as he gets into the NBA. But I don't expect that from him. At least rookie year, I don't expect that from him at all.
I don't expect it. And I am also going to be curious if the Grizzlies encourage it or not yet. Because even if that is part of his offensive bag, that's tremendous. And it's going to certainly help the Memphis Grizzlies. I want to see him do the simple things first.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see him do the screen setting, the rebounding, the defense. Let's focus on those things first, and then you can bring in the three-point shot. But that's where, you know, Vernon did ask him, well, can he set Steven Adams screens? And Jaren was just kind of like, he's kind of looked at him. It's like, that's a good... It was a very positive appearance for Jaren Jackson Jr. when it comes to Zach.
I know, like, obviously you don't want to give them the leeway to stretch out to the three-point line game one or anything. But like you say, you want to see him do the symbol.
Imagine first shot of the season, Zach Edey from the half-court logo.
Yeah. My thing is, though, like, you say, I want to see him do the simple things first. I don't have any doubt he can do the simple things.
I don't have doubt.
That's me. I know there's some people out there that are going to hold out, but this guy is 7'4". He's wide as all outside. The guy can set screens. He can roll to the basket. He can rebound at a high level. He showed that he could block shots in summer league, although, again, we have to see it on an NBA floor. But, like, with his size and his relative athleticism with that size, all the things that you say are simple things for him feel like they will be just that simple.
Agreed. Just want to see him do it within the system first. You know. But at the same time, if he steps out and hits a three within the first 5 minutes, you're just going to hear me screaming. I'm just going to be
I still might hear you screaming.
Yes, you will.
Yeah. Now let's go ahead and grab a break. And when we come back, we do have some Memphis basketball news. And I think more on the positive side than it has been for the past week, although we will discuss that in addition to the commitment that the University of Memphis got today, Penny Hardaway got today. We'll talk about that next. 89 FM ESPN. Today we got some relatively positive news on the Memphis basketball front after a week of what I would just describe as drama and nonsense. There's no way of hiding that. But Buna Kibi is a rising junior. He is 6'8". He is listed as a forward. He committed to the University of Memphis today. He held another offer from LIU Brooklyn. This is late in the game. Memphis adds him. He has a journey that he has taken to get to this point. He played high school basketball at Lincoln Academy, went to JUCO at Independence, and then Gillette. And then now he is at Memphis. And this was announced by his NIL representation, so I don't know all of what that means. But he's a forward. Had 15 starts last year at Gillette in Wyoming. 11.2 points per game, 7.1 rebounds per game on 53% shooting. Not much of a three-point shooter, but he can put the ball on the ground. He's got some athleticism. And I think more so than anything, this is a guy that'll be probably farther down the bench, but certainly can give you some rim-running ability, some athleticism, and he can block some shots at the rim on both ends. This is nothing to be overly excited about because I think most of the roster is already set, but it's an addition that I think, why not? You have some depth. A little more depth never hurts.
It's absolutely a good move by the Memphis Tigers. I'm happy he's on the team. It seems like he's a really tough, hard-nosed basketball player, and that is the type of guys that Penny Hardaway usually has success with. So I'm happy that he's on the roster. He's got good size at 6'8". Sounds like he rebounds the basketball pretty well, and he can block a shot, like you said. Solid depth piece for the Memphis Tigers.
He's from Senegal originally. He's still really, really raw.
Yeah,
like that's the thing you have to understand about this guy. He's had to take the long road, which I think in a lot of ways is a good thing for a lot of guys, having to learn the game and learn it at different spots, having to change scenery a fair amount. That's a good thing for a lot of the guys you bring in at the University of Memphis because you're changing scenery yet again. But I think this is going to be sort of a guy, you know, heading into the season as they get into training camp, they're going to have to develop him into what they want him to be. He's not going to be a guy on the forefront for this team, but he will be a guy guy that I'd imagine can get some minutes and when you put yourself in a pinch in the front court.
Right. Yeah, I'm happy he's on the roster. It's a really good depth piece by Penny Hardaway and the coaching staff. So thumbs up.
It's nice to see a commitment, though, after what last week was,
yeah,
right?
For sure, yes.
Like, last week was just complete nonsense. It was all over the place. But at the same time, you know, Penny Hardaway's never done putting together a roster. This is the 9th scholarship transfer they've brought in this offseason. I know everybody wants to see more continuity, but he's got 2 years of eligibility, so he could potentially be on this roster heading into next season, even after this season. So we'll see how it all plays out. I think it's a nice boost to the Tigers' depth, but I don't think you need to read into it much more than that. But again, after last week, any type of commitment news, positive news, if there was NIL news, anything feels like a nice little you get your extra win heading into this season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that he has 2 years of eligibility remaining, too. You know, could be somebody that sticks around for a few years.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see
how it all plays out.
We'll see.
With the front court, what do you think about the front court all said and done? Because they have their four pieces. They have Dane Danger. They have Tyreek Smith. They have Musa. And then Nick Jourdain is sort of the idea. But they want to play him more on the wing.
It's good.
I would imagine he's going to get a fair amount, I mean, some minutes this year. I would imagine he's going to get some minutes because they're not. While they have all the pieces I want them to have in that front court, Musa, rim protection, rim running, big, who the last time was on this, was on campus, number one adjusted defense for this team. He's been a blocks leader in college basketball before. You have Dane Danger, who's going to be the more offensively inclined guy. He's dropped some weight. Tyreek Smith, complete rim-running crazy man. I'd imagine like this is a guy who they expect to get some minutes this year, but I'm sort of debating it right now. I know a guy, I've brought him on the show to talk NBA draft prospects before, Derek Murray. Derek Murray's been following Boone. I'm waiting on a text back from him to see exactly what I need to know about Boone Akibi. But I'd imagine, considering this front court is sort of 3 and 4, if you count Nick Jourdain, guys deep, it feels like this is a guy who they probably are going to want to play at some point.
Probably so. I wouldn't be surprised if he got some minutes. Honestly, I think that they have a solid group of guys here. I am hoping that Dane Danger can give you some of what you expected
from Jordan Brown
to give you. It seems like a lot of people in college basketball think he could be a major X factor for this Memphis Tigers team, because in the minutes that he got last year, he was very effective. So I have a lot of hope that Dane Danger.
And he was great in the tournament for Illinois.
Very good.
But here's the thing about it, and I just, maybe, you know, maybe they'll figure it out this year with a big. There's just intentionality, right, about getting a big the ball in a Penny Hardaway offense. When you have Tyrese Hunter and you have P.J. Haggerty and you have these talented guys on the wing, you have to be intentional about going and getting a big the ball. And they tried to, I think, at moments with Jordan Brown when he was still playing with them last year.
He stopped.
But he just wasn't good enough.
He was bad.
And I think Dane Danger certainly is going to be better.
Yeah.
But you still have to show some intentionality about getting a guy like that the ball. Right? Like that was the big question about Jordan Brown even heading into the season, even though he had those great stats and we expected big things. You still have to be as intentional as possible to go get a big the ball. And I haven't we're not used to the Tigers doing that. And everybody wants to bring up DeAndre Williams, but DeAndre Williams played around the perimeter a lot, played from the high post.
Yeah.
And the ball ran through him, so I don't think that's a fair comparison. The only one that I always come back to is Jalen Duren, but that was the back half of the regular season going into the tournament, and you saw them being intentional about getting him the ball. And he played really well. That's a very talented guy who's off to the NBA.
Yeah, I do wonder if having this team together now and being able to do legitimate summer workouts may help smooth those things out a little bit, because they'll have some more chemistry heading into the season. Like, yeah. I do think that one of the reasons we felt it was a bit disjointed last year, I understand that they were 15-2 at one point, but I think that all of us can agree that you did feel like it was holding on with, you know, tape.
Yeah.
Like, you felt like, okay, they escaped a few of these games, and it was clunky in moments. I am hoping that just having this team together already is going to help it smooth out a little bit. And I agree with you, though. The absolute guys that are going to be running the show are P.J. Haggerty, Tyrese Hunter, and they'll probably be leading the offense mostly. But I think that they'll find moments where Dane Danger can get involved, especially if he is showing effort. Because when a guy is showing effort on both sides of the basketball, and we can just be quite honest about it, Jordan Brown wasn't in any way showing effort on any side of the basketball, you kind of make it a point to get those guys and get them involved because you want to reward them for their efforts. And I just... I don't want, I'm not going to worry about it until it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way. Yeah. I think that they'll be able to figure out the balance because this is a really talented roster, and I do think that they should be able to flow together a little bit more than the team last
year. Well, yeah, 100%. And what we can be agreeable on is, yeah, we're talking about offense.
There's more playmakers here.
We're talking about offense and how they're going to be able to pace themselves offensively. I mean, last year they were a good offensive team, but defensively there was nothing. We still think this is a defensive team. This is what this team's going to be. That's going to be their calling card. But I do think there's some optionality when it comes to their offense. I think Tyrese Hunter can be a potential 15 to 20 point per game scorer. P.J. Haggerty, same idea. And I think Dane Danger could put himself in that 10 to 12 point category. And then from there, you just sort of pick up the pieces, who's going to step up in given games based on matchup, everything like that. But I this offense is going to be the concern the entire time heading into the season. Right? There's no questions about that.
They have a lot of talent on the offensive end. We just got to figure out what the pecking order is, I think.
For me, the pecking order seems kind of
It's because it's P.J. Haggerty, one, then probably Tyrese Hunter.
I think it could be after that. But you could replace one or two in any order with Tyrese Hunter.
I think it's P.J.
And P.J. Haggerty.
I think it's clearly P.J. Think it's clearly going to be P.J.
You think it'll be clear cut?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
I think it'll be game to game. Because both those guys are going to have the ball in their hands. Because
One of them may have more points game to game, but P.J. is going to be the guy. He came in to be the guy. That's why he is here.
What do you think Tyrese Hunter did? And his final year of eligibility.
It's not the same. It's P.J. Haggerty's the guy they're building this team around. He is going to be the point man.
And then we don't forget about Colby Rogers. I think that's a guy who could be up there 10 points per game.
I think he could be the three or four. Then, Jared Harris is there. But every once in a while, you want Dane Danger to be there.
I don't know. Jared Harris.
You want Nick Jordan to be there.
Let me ask you, do you expect much from Jared Harris?
I don't know. I like their
rotational piece, maybe.
They're going to have some of these rotation guys pop off here and there to win some of these games.
Yeah.
It will have to happen.
Unless they win every game 50 to 49. Which I think, weirdly enough,
they're still going to have some of these guys pop off every once in a while. You got to score 50 points.
Well, pop off in a 50-49 game is 6 points.
That'd be popping off, Jared Harris. Yeah. give me 6 to 8 every once in a while.
Yeah, but again, it's funny, with all of this and a roster that you still have questions about, Bart Torvik still loves them, man.
Their defense. They're going to be
25, 24. He's had them sort of ranked there between the 24 and the 26 mark. This just about the entire offseason.
I like Tyreek Smith a lot, too.
This is another year, though. After last year, you didn't want Bart Torvik to be right about the way he was ranking this team. But he was. You want him to be right again. You want him to be very, very right about this team. And I think it makes sense. It just fits his scheme better. You have more defensive pieces. You have guys who can still give you a 20-point performance here and there. It makes sense the way this roster has been put together, but it's going to have to be put to the test. And the other part of this is, with last week's nonsense, you're going to have Mike Davis in a little bit late, Nolan Smith a little bit late. Those guys are going to have to create a rapport with these players immediately.
Where do you think Barack Okogie is going to land in the pecking order?
Well, he's still rehabbing from an injury.
But he'll be part of that team.
I think he will be the first one of the
sixth man? Maybe?
Starting lineup, Tyrese Hunter, P.J. Haggerty, Colby Rogers, Dane Danger, probably Nick Jordan.
Or Musa.
No, Musa's not. I don't think Musa's going to start.
Really?
I don't think
Musa's going to start?
No. I think he'll be a guy off the bench. I guess, in certain situations, you could bring Musa into that starting lineup. But I think Barack Okogie, when he's all healthy and ready to go, could be the first guy off the bench and your secondary ball handler when you take one of the two off the floor, Tyrese Hunter or P.J. Haggerty. But we know, I don't think this team is built quite like Penny Hardaway's had in the past, where you have these mass substitutions. Now, we know he likes to do that.
I hope not.
We know he likes to do that, but I don't know if this team's built exactly for that.
Well, it's tell the truth time. We know he likes to do that. It hasn't worked.
Yeah, 100%.
His most successful runs have been when he is
playing
eight guys and said, "These are my guys." So I hope he does that. And this is the type of team
where I'm sorry, just based on the amount of scholarship players and the amount of legitimate players that he thinks can impact winning, and that we think can impact winning, I just don't know if he's going to have that available to him, which is a good thing. I'm not saying it isn't. But I think that I don't know if they have the depth or the pieces to go 10 guys every single game. He may try to force it at the early part of the season, but I think that would be dangerous because you're going to have a really tough schedule in the early part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And we know he'll test it in the Mizzou game and some of the Ohio game, things like that. But hopefully he finds it earlier than he has found it in the past.
I hope so. I hope so.
That's all you have to say.
I have a lot of hope for this team. I really do. I like how it is built. I think that you have some guys on the offensive end that can keep you going there. PJ Haggerty, Tyrese Hunter, Dane Danger, Colby Rogers. It feels like those four are really going to drive the offensive side of the basketball.
And then everybody can play defense for the most part.
And then every single guy, there has been a through line with every single guy that they have brought in. Not, I guess PJ Haggerty tries, but it's not like he's known for his defense.
No.
But everybody else, hard-nosed defender that can get it done one-on-one. I think that was a lot of the issues last year is the guys were just getting blown by one-on-one, and it was they're having to overhelp, and they're leaving these three-point shots wide open. Just don't let teams shoot from three like they got on you last year. That was such a huge issue.
Yep. Yeah, but Boone Akibi, if you're just now joining us, commits to the University of Memphis.
Good pickup.
From Senegal, he's a rising junior. He'll play forward for the Tigers. 6'8", and 11 points per game, 7 rebounds, had a couple of block shots last year in JUCO. And he's been a guy who's been rising as of late. Like, that's been the conversation around him. I think both the offers he got, LIU Brooklyn and Memphis, came in, like, the last week. This is very recent.
But sounds like he's just a very hard worker, which yeah. I will take somebody yes. like that all day, every day.
Well, and that's always the conversation we have about Penny Hardaway, too, when it comes to, like, especially the way last year's roster was built. You have to find the right personalities. You have to, especially after last year. Yeah, you want to get that defensive identity all created and get it back right the way you have been in the past. But the personalities clashed last year, and you don't want to run into that situation again because that was one of the most historic drop-offs for any team I've ever seen in college basketball history.
I think most of it
was just personality not clashing or not jiving with the other personalities on the team. They just didn't like each other enough. And hopefully this team can like each other a little bit more. Now, I want to move on to a quick story out of Michigan today. This is so strange to me because there's been two games played already. But if you have not been following what's going on at Michigan with Sharon Moore, the new head coach for the football team, he didn't have his contract worked out. He had not put pen to paper. He was working on his old offensive coordinator contract. Correct.
For yes. real?
Yes. But today, finalize the contract, pen to paper. The framework of this thing kind of is very strange to me. And I think you'll feel the same way once I read this out. They've had the framework since January, but again, it's officially signed. His contract was set to be for 5 years, base salary of $500,000, $500,000, and $5 million in additional compensation in year one. So right around $5.5 million in year one. But his salary and additional compensation would increase by 2% in the subsequent years with a $500,000 bonus each year that he remained the head coach. This is a very much, after Jim Harbaugh, trial and error deal for Sharon Moore. And it makes me go down this path even more, where I said, Jim Harbaugh, yeah, it looks like he did Sharon Moore a favor handing it down and telling the people at Michigan to give him the job. But with all of the things that are spiraling out of control, from the NCAA violation standpoint, with what we saw on the field last week, with what we saw in Davis Warren as the former walk-on as the starting quarterback, this feels like Michigan has just thrown out feelers and they're hoping for the best for Sharon Moore. And I don't know if this is going to work out ultimately.
That is such an odd contract. And the fact that it hasn't been done until now, that is a very
I would have
surprise.
To go in and check out like other coaches' contracts to like see what their base salary is. But I imagine a lot of the schools, like if you're at a top 10 football university in America, and I imagine your base salary is more than $500,000. And also, I want to know the question, because this was not answered in the ESPN article that I read, the additional compensation of $5 million, how much is that tied to incentives?
Right.
As in winning the Big Ten championship, or winning 8 games, getting to a national championship, getting into the college football playoff, how much is that $5 million tied to incentives? It just seems very weird. But Michigan is in a very peculiar spot, so I understand it. But if he does get $5.5 million in year one, that's still, for a place like Michigan, that's not a lot of money. That really isn't. You have coaches getting $13 million, $11 million. And I understand they've proved a lot more than Sharon Moore, but $5.5 million at Michigan is a drop in the bucket. That is a small, small contract on a per-year basis for a Michigan football head coach. Kind of wild.
They expect one of us in the wreckage, brother.
Yes, that's exactly. I still have that opinion. Jim Harbaugh just said, man, you got to stay behind and deal with these things. They expect one of us back here. But
man, how about a week one from Jim Harbaugh, though?
That was pretty good.
Looked amazing.
Chargers fans are like salivating over what they saw because he didn't give up a single pressure.
Have you heard
from
his
Max
nickname?
Crosby.
His nickname?
Control. Or hold up. Joe Alt Delete.
Incredible.
Can I get a ding for that?
Incredible.
Can I get an applause?
No, honestly.
There we go.
Just
Joe Alt Delete's pretty good.
Just 10 out of 10 nickname. Really.
That is really good. That is really good.
And Max Crosby was the guy across from him?
Get this. I saw this.
It's like Kevin Hart's security guard.
He didn't have a single pressure on Joe Alt the entire day. I think there was 9 pass blocking snaps. That's the first time a singular offensive tackle has shut out Max Crosby since 2022. And he's a freaking rookie. That's nuts. But it is kind of funny to see how they're running that team now. It was all Justin Herbert slinging it, you know, throwing the ball 40 times a game. And now they have J.K. Dobbins rising from the ashes like a phoenix.
Can he continue that all year?
I drafted him in the 92.9 league. So I think you certainly did. I asked you this yesterday off air. I'll take an off air conversation on air. I have to start him next week.
It's like I have to play Xavier Worthy this week. I have to.
Well, that was a little different. That was a nasty blown coverage that really got him all his
But play. I have to do it. Because Amari Cooper has Deshaun Watson as his
quarterback. The only thing that holds me back from the J.K. Dobbins thing, he only had 10 carries, but it was 135 yards.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. They're going to win this week. Do you know who they're playing? They're at the Panthers.
Okay.
So
play J.K. Dobbins.
Play everybody.
In other words, play if you have a Chargers player or if you have a Chargers defense, play them. Play them.
They're going to have
a
good
day. Or pick them up on the waiver wire. Pick them up on
they
the
should have a good
play.
Day.
They should. They ought to. The Panthers are terrible.
Should I play Palmer?
Let's go ahead and grab a break. When we come back, we're going to bring on my guy. We have a home and home agreed to. I'll be on his show 125 tomorrow, but he's going to join right here at 5 o'clock. Jason Smith from Jason and John is next.